One Sunday this year, I was the storyteller in Spirit Play. That's our program for kids in grade school. And the story that day was the parable of the Good Samaritan. Somebody has asked Jesus how to live. The response is that the Jewish law says you love God with all your heart and you love your neighbor as yourself. So the questioner wants to know, who is my neighbor? Jesus tells a story. One day a man was walking the long road between two cities. We use laminated figures for the stories we tell on a large spread out cloth on the floor, or we use 3D props. And two robbers came and beat him up and stole his money and left him lying at the side of the road in a ditch, moaning and bleeding. As he lay there, a religious leader, somebody like a minister, came walking down the road in his fine garments. As he neared the man by the roadside, he heard him crying. He approached and looked down at him, and then he crossed over to the other side of the road and kept on walking. At this point, some of the kids howled, "No! You're kidding me!" It was not so much an interruption as an eruption of moral disbelief. I went on with the story. A second important person came down the road, looked at the hurting man, and crossed on by to the other side. Only the next person, who was a Samaritan, would stop. And even though nobody back then thought a Samaritan would do anything good, this person, this Samaritan, helped a person. He took the man into the city and took him to an inn and paid the innkeeper for a room and healed the man's, tended to the man's wounds, and then said he would come back and pay the innkeeper any more money owed. And so after the story, Jesus asks, which one was being a neighbor? In Spirit Play, after we tell a story, we ask a few questions. We call it the wondering time. I wonder, have you heard any of this before? I wonder, which person did you find the most interesting? Does the story remind you of any of our UU principles? In Spirit Play, we call them the promises, the UU rainbow promises. The big moment of that session seemed to be the shock of discovering that a person could step around another human being who was gravely injured. The kids knew this was wrong. As author Ivy Beckwith notes, ethical and spiritual values are more often caught than taught. These values are absorbed and embedded through our interactions in groups, in families, and in communities, and through our shared reflections about life together. In a congregation, she says, relationships need to be developed with the intention of positively forming our children. Beckwith is a minister to families and children in a progressive Protestant church out east. I've been taking a class with her online. The title of her book is Formational Children's Ministry. The title of the class is Let's Ditch Sunday School. In these times, she says, the purpose of our ministry to children no longer is schooling. It is aiding in the development of spiritual lives. Long gone are the days when any congregation could hope to download a lot of religious information into the minds and memories of kids. It would be overwhelming even to try. There's too little time, for starters. And God knows we do not need any more information. We need more understanding, patience, courage, and love. We need hope. Here at UUSS, our religious education coordinator, Miranda, and I assure our volunteers and our potential volunteers we assure you that you need not be an expert in teaching or in religion or even in children. You need only be authentic, present, and reflective. What we have to offer in this place is relationships. Real people to real people of any age or size. The purpose of a children's program here is the purpose of the congregation at large. We are here to help one another to embrace life with gratitude and joy, to help one another to walk in the ways of kindness, understanding, peace, and compassion. We are in the spiritual formation business. This can happen not only in a Sunday school room, but at any time two or three of us are gathered. Anytime two or three of us are gathered, it can happen. In this congregation, we promote building relationships of joy and meaning across the generations. Last weekend, more than 80 folks gathered at our all-ages camp at a recreation center an hour east of here. Single people, parents with kids, teenagers, you name it. Our age range spanned 9 decades of age. People played board games, flag football, and frisbee. We taught one another card games and weaving. A big hit of the camp this year was making rockets out of construction paper and using the soft cap of a water bottle. To launch the rocket you made, you would put it in a pipe and you would pump a bicycle pump, and then you would hit the ignition button from about 6 feet away. Every time we look up to see how high a kid's rocket went before it came falling down back on the meadow. My contribution to this work was to show that it's more exciting if before you press the ignition button, you do a countdown and then you yell, "Blast off!" What I'm telling you about could be an advertisement for next year's camp, but that's not my intention. It could be a pitch for doing weekend retreats more frequently as a congregation. And that's not a bad idea. When we take some time together to help one another or play a game or sing a song or eat a meal at a picnic or just introduce ourselves, we build relationships. And relationships are formational. We shape one another by how we connect and by how we experience one another. In an intentional community, we make impressions on one another. We make impressions on our heart and soul about living in this world. On the second morning of camp, I said, "Good morning," to a boy. "How's it going for you?" "Good. I've met a lot of people," he beamed. This came as a surprise. A surprise that he spoke to me, because on Sundays here, I find him quiet. Perhaps a little more quality time is what turns merely being in the same place together into being in the same community together. Perhaps a little more quality time is what turns merely being in the same place together into being in the same community together. That's what formational ministry is all about. Helping one another, seeing one another, greeting one another by name, in a safe place that we create by our intention and our presence. Among the parents of the children we blessed in this service, one mother was herself dedicated at a Unitarian church, her grandfather's church in New York City in March of 1979. Amanda was just a few months old. She told us this last year in a stewardship testimonial. Though her spiritual journey has had many resting places outside of our UU movement, it was in our congregation that she replanted her roots in a UU community along with Daryl and the kids. At Amanda's blessing ceremony in 1979, the minister said, "In the church, the child will be introduced to her world. There she will learn meanings people have found in the skies, the fields, the hills, the valleys, and the cities of humanity. There, the child will be able to count the number of her days and weigh their meaning, and to treasure beauty, mercy, and justice in the deep places of her being." That's not information, that's formation. Amanda said to us last year, "Children are guided not only by their parents, but by the people surrounding them, their friends, their family, their neighbors, and their elders. What the Unitarian Universalists are and are not, what they stand for or against, what they consider, what they notice, what they act on, or not at all, is what I want my children to grow up around." That's what Amanda said. The goal of Unitarian Universalist religious education is not to manufacture millions of new UUs, or to keep every last one of them that walks in our doors or gets welcomed in a blessing ceremony. The goal of the spiritual formation we practice here is not really to hang on to these kids long into the future, though it's great when that happens. The goal is to enrich their lives right now, in the present, and your life, and my life. Our work is to help one another to embrace life with gratitude and joy, and help one another to walk in the ways of kindness, understanding, peace, and compassion. 10 years ago, I flew to Chicago to attend a conference of a national interfaith economic justice organization. It's devoted to empowering low-wage workers in cities around the country and pursuing fair treatment of workers. At one luncheon at the conference, sitting across my table was a tall young man just out of college. "Do you remember me?" he asked. After an initial surprise at seeing such a grown-up person, I did remember. As a teen, he had been in the youth group of the Second Unitarian Church of Chicago when I was a volunteer, back before I became a minister. One of his parents was Jewish and the other Protestant, and he had grown up as a UU. Once, at a service back there at our church, he had moved us by playing a classical piece on the piano. As we all sighed or applauded, another teenage boy came to the pulpit to give a short sermon. But he looked over and grinned, "Wow, someday I can say I knew him." Now, as a young adult, this person told me he hadn't practiced the piano in a long time. It would not be his career or his calling. But he'd found a job as an activist for low-wage workers, and he was fired up. I asked him, "How is our church doing, our old church, my old church? I haven't been there very much," he said. "How come?" He said that for him, the church of his childhood seemed to lack enough openness to spiritual passion and religious language. He needed a strong spiritual home to sustain him through his long days and nights of passionate social action. He wanted a connection with the divine, he said, and he didn't feel enough support for that. I haven't seen him since then, but last week I looked him up online. On Facebook, I learned that he has a new job as a community organizer in a neighborhood on another side of Chicago from where he grew up. And I learned that he's joined another church, not a UU congregation, but one from a moderate Protestant faith, a church in his new neighborhood. My heart sank. "We lost one," I said to myself. I thought about that young UU teenager I had known, the one with enthusiasm and talent and care for his world. Then I realized that I was caught up in a scarcity mindset, as if his transition to another faith was the end of the world for Unitarian Universalism. I reflected, here is a young person who values religious community, and he has found one that suits his needs and his longings. Maybe Second Unitarian Church had something to do with shaping a person who pursues his longing for community. Here is a young man who feels called to the work of justice in his world. He puts his heart and soul into making a difference. Perhaps we had something to do with shaping a person who pursues his calling. I think that growing up in our church made an impression on his heart and soul. The purpose of spiritual formation is not to increase our attendance numbers, it's to enrich our lives. The purpose is to enlarge the courage, love, generosity, and joy with which we live. Last week at our camp, I had an exciting conversation with one of the adult volunteers in our junior high youth group. He asked, "What's the purpose of religious education here?" I asked him what he thought, and then I said what I thought. The purpose of our community, our whole community, is to help one another to embrace life with gratitude and joy, and help one another to walk in the ways of kindness, understanding, peace, and compassion. I said, I consider it a success if what comes out of 9 months of religious education is that you, as a volunteer, know all of them, and they remember the names of all of the adults who volunteer to spend time with them. From these relationships, I'm sure that our youth will feel that they know our spiritual values, even if they can't recite the whole seven principles. The most important thing is that they know that this congregation is their home, and they know they are cherished for who they are. This, I believe, is what we all need. Today's message could be a pitch for you to think about volunteering in religious education for the fall. If it works out that way, I'll be happy. But this message goes beyond that. When we practice religious community as an avenue for spiritual formation, it's never a one-way street. It's not as if you have only gifts to give, or as if you have only needs to be filled when you come here. We give and receive gifts with one another. We shape and form one another. We all do this. You can do this. If the only thing you ever do is greet another person after services in the spirit of welcome, recognizing their humanity, you are giving this gift. But remember, as you greet another, the other person greets you. You have as much of a chance to receive that welcome as to give it. Last Sunday night around the campfire, young adults played guitar, and baby boomers and elders sang with passion. A girl came up to me and asked if she could make me a s'more. I'd already eaten one, but how could I turn down the offer? Or the next one. Just leave off the chocolate this time. It's getting too rich. I know she was not trying to curry favor with her minister, as she made the same offer to others nearby. Our formational ministry is about sharing, noticing, treasuring, loving, and growing together. It's for all of us. It does not end when childhood ends. We make impressions on one another's heart. Our work is to help others to embrace life with gratitude and joy. Our purpose now, today, and always is to help one another to walk in the ways of kindness, understanding, peace, and compassion. We are so blessed to be doing this together for one another and for ourselves and for the world. So may it be. Blessed be. Amen and namaste.